Hi, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, and you are listening to What a Piece of Junk podcast.
Stepping lightly in the danger zone, no weapon in my hand, just this brain designed by man, got me in trouble again.
I'm in trouble.
Oh, hey, Derek, sorry, I didn't see you there. I was just jamming out to this hot, awesome, totally slaps 1985 Droids theme song, which might be a little bit of a spoiler about the topic for today's episode of What a Piece of Junk, the podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network, all about Star Wars. With me, as always, is my co-host and co-pilot, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, how are you doing out there?
I'm doing good, Scott. As I mentioned to you off air before we started recording, just getting over a bit of a sinus infection. Luckily, that's all it was. Is I had to get tested for that and, for COVID and the flu, and both of those came back negative. So, finishing up the weekend. It's been really gorgeous weather. You know, mid 70s or low 80s, and beautiful sun, light breeze, all that. So, we've been doing a lot of fun stuff with the family. But yeah, ready to talk some droids. But how's your week been?
Oh, not too bad. I got to hang out with the kids. We played a lot of Marvel Crisis Protocol, which is a really fun miniatures game from our friends over at Atomic Mass Games that make the Star Wars Legion tabletop game. And then we also got to play some of the new Warhammer 40,000 Kill Team, which is a really strong gaming system for that particular fiction, and just a lot of fun in general. I got to level up some of my characters in Warhammer 40K Kill Team. So what better weekend could I have than gaming with my kids and with Mr. Nathan Miracle? Nathan is unable to join us tonight. He said he was busy, but I personally think it's because he turns his nose up at any Star Wars animation that isn't done by Dave Filoni.
I personally think it's because he's actually a robot.
Oh,
just like in Loki.
That's right.
He doesn't know he's a robot, but I think he secretly knows he's a robot.
Yeah, and so he doesn't want to talk about the droids cartoon because, man, did the robots get some disrespect in that cartoon. But Anyway, this episode's going to be a little light. It's kind of the summer doldrums here aboard the Drunken Gungan. But we're going to time warp to 1985, where you might have found a much younger Scott sitting in front of his television on a Saturday morning with a bowl of C-3POs, watching Star Wars droids. But before we jump into that discussion, we're going to do Derek's favorite part of the show. And that is, what Star Wars t-shirts are we wearing this week? Derek, what you got?
I've got, here we go, my little turtle tee.
Excellent. It's Chibi Mando Din Djarin there with the bibi. Mr.
The
Grogu.
Chibi baby. I don't know if he can get any more chibi than
I know, right?
Already, but yeah. But yeah, no, just obviously we'll talk a little bit about that in the news today. So in honor of The Mandalorian season 2, I wore my shirt today. Scott, what shirt do you have on?
Well, in honor of my 1980s theme for today's episode, I'm wearing my Empire Strikes Back arcade game from the 1980s, made by our friends at Atari. And it is the scene where you are able to take your T-47 snowspeeder and try to trip up an AT-AT walker to get extra points in the video game. And this was, of course, the sequel to one of the best Star Wars video games of all time, the original Star Wars arcade game from Atari, where you had to pilot your X-Wing through a phalanx of TIE fighters and down the trench on the Death Star. But in this one, you were recreating the famous scenes from The Empire Strikes Back. And so it's got the awesome walker there and the snowspeeder, the high score, and of course, the hint of the vector grid graphics behind it on a nice gray tee,
which resembles a lot of the droids intro.
It certainly does. See, I'm Mr. Topical today, because alone amongst most of the Star Wars fans that I know in real life, I actually watched this droids cartoon when it came on broadcast television back in the day.
I would have been 2 years old. But I was probably a little bit early for that. Probably when I was about four was when I remember really watching a lot of like Saturday morning cartoons,
so
specifically like Muppet Babies Babies, Pee-wee's Playhouse, all that stuff. So
I loved the Muppet Babies cartoon because there was a scene from Star Wars in the opening credits. How cool was that?
Yeah.
But yes, in 1985, Scott was 8 years old. So I was the prime audience for this cartoon. But even then, I didn't really super enjoy it. But enough about that. If you want your own cool Star Wars related t-shirt, you can go check out our TeePublic store so you can get an awesome What a Piece of Junk t-shirt or iPad case or mouse pad or coffee mug or anything cool like that. So just head on over to teepublic.com and search up Fandom Podcast Network on the search bar. Normally, this is the part of the show where I wander over to the bar to get a drink and some Star Wars news, but 8-year-old Scott in 1985 would not be allowed to drink, so we're just going to go straight for the Star Wars news because we actually have a pretty good amount of it, Derek. You've been out there scouring the hollow nets. What did you find out?
So we've got some really cool stuff. As I mentioned, part of the reason I was wearing my Mando shirt today is because we actually get to talk about some Emmy wins. We mentioned it several weeks ago when the nominees came out, but we're super excited to talk about that the Mandalorian season 2 brought home 3 Emmy wins.
Yeah.
So far for, which is for makeup, cinematography, and sound. So I think makeup for obviously the big one was Ahsoka.
Yes. Yeah, that totally.
Was, I think really cool because, you know, I think when you look at what Ahsoka was in the actual TV series of the Clone Wars and Rebels, you can definitely, you know, see that. I mean, it's just a weird looking alien creature, right? And for them to take Rosario Dawson and, you know, transport her into, you know, creating this cartoon character to a realistic, ideal, believable Star Wars character was obviously, I think, icing on the cake, which sealed it in. So,
yeah, and just watching Dawson be, and the other performers, of course, be able to do the stunts and the fighting and the emoting with all the Leku and the orange skin and so forth. I mean, it's really impressive. I know some fans were real ticky-tack about, her Leku thing should be longer, according to what she looked like in the cartoon. But as we often have noted here, just because you look a certain way within the stylized art of Clone Wars or Rebels doesn't mean that that would be what that alien or that character would look like, quote unquote, in real life. I mean, just look at the way Count Dooku was animated in the Clone Wars. I mean, it's sort of an idea.
The biggest chin ever.
Yeah, it's almost like a concept.
Got the opposite.
Right. You know, it's like this is sort of a hint at an idea of Christopher Lee as Count Dooku, but not the real Christopher Lee, you know. Yeah. So I think that what they did with Ahsoka's makeup is amazing. And of course, the makeup for all the other aliens that we get to see in background shots or, you know, just other characters that are interrelated there. You know, it was cool that when they went back to Navarro, we got to see Greef Karga and his blue fish friend. I mean, you know, making Horatio Sands look even weirder is a pretty big accomplishment in makeup.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, I mean, Rosario Dawson talked about it, that the Leku's had to be shorter because actually when it came to using the lightsabers and the part of the stunt stuff that she did do, they were in the way.
Yeah.
So it's like actually, you know, for once, like I guess you would say biology/physics actually played an important role in Star
Yes.
Wars.
Yes. See, what fans don't understand is they spent most of the budget on making real lightsabers, and early on she cut off the ends of the Leku with the lightsabers as props, you know. So they just had to sort of tape them down and retcon, hey, that's what she looked like. It's totally not because we cut them off with real lightsabers.
Yeah. And then obviously, you know, sound, which is weird because it's not music.
Yeah. But, you know, we got a lot of explosions in Star Wars. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
A lot of cool sound effects are when the stormtroopers are falling off the cliffs going, ah.
Yes, yes. And of course, the iconic blaster bolts coming from people's, you know, guns firing. Mm-hmm. And the flamethrower sound from when Din opens up his flame gauntlets, and to say nothing of all the starship sound effects.
Yeah. And I'm curious, what did the cinematography get? Which episode? Do you know which one it got for that? Was it the Luke Skywalker episode with the deep fake or what?
I don't know.
Or would have been the action scene from Robert Rodriguez's episode. I would assume that would have been it, but I don't know.
It might have.
They don't give any information on it.
Yeah. So. Well, I'll probably have to wait until the actual Emmy ceremony later this year to get any details. Yep. But I mean, it's interesting how specific the Emmys have become, because it's not just outstanding cinematography. It's outstanding cinematography for a single camera series, half hour division. So they weren't even up against any other hour long single camera series. It's
and then they go from outstanding sound mixing for a comedy or drama series. Like,
yeah, I always found it weird. How could you have comedy and drama in the same category? Yeah. I mean, it's literally one or the other mask of the classic acting mask. You know, Shakespeare is upset with you. That's all I can say to the Television Academy.
Anyways, congrats on them. And again, they actually had 19 nominations, the most out of anyone. So that was really cool. So,
yeah. And so there is a chance, of course, that they will be able to win even more awards. And those awards may have been announced by the time we publish this episode, in which case, future active congrats to The Mandalorian for more Emmys, because the Emmys actually take place over two nights now, because why not? And so the like big acting and directing awards haven't been announced yet.
No, they're going on right now.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, on some sadder news for The Mandalorian, what we're talking about right now is season 3. Rumors out there that there might be some delay in production, that we may not be getting that until really late 2022, because they're saying the filming for season 3 is going to start from September 20th till March 23rd.
Yeah.
So, and obviously, you got the holidays and stuff, but just that's a long time. So,
yeah. And unless, you know, they've got a lot of assets saved already and can just do real quick digital wizardry, it's going to take longer than between March and September to get all the episodes polished. Now, I have heard that sometimes when it comes to the streaming services like Disney Plus, that there are instances where people are working on the episode the week before it gets released, when you have these staggered release, because, you know, unlike Netflix and what have you, we don't get every episode of The Mandalorian dumped all at once, right? And I have heard rumors that some shows do tweak things right up until the day before they're supposed to come out.
Well, South Park does it with actually on network cable television. They
that
do
is
it the
true
week
yeah
before. So yeah, I mean, granted, yeah, it's animation and stuff like that, but they literally do the entire thing the week before, because they try to do so much current event items that they're literally writing the episodes the day like the current episode is airing for the next week's show.
Right. And I've heard that Star Trek's Lower Decks does a few tweaks here and there, you know, because they also don't dump every episode all at once. But once again, Lower Decks is an animated show, not live action like The Mandalorian. Yeah. So who knows? And of course, as with all of our rumors during this segment of the podcast, this might be total bunk.
Well, it's kind of interesting with what the guy, this Philip Sugarman, in regards to it looks like the card or something in regards to the way it's showing up in the time frame on Hollywood Boulevard or whatever. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, it looks like it's some kind of a I don't want to say call sheet, but it's similar to a call sheet, and it shows the location of
Huckleberry Industries.
Yes, Huckleberry, of course, being the code name for The Mandalorian, just like Blue Harvest was the code name for Return of the Jedi and so forth. And it shows the location is the Manhattan Beach Studios Media Campus. Producer Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Karen Gilchrist. Writer slash producer Jon Favreau. And then I don't actually know what LP and PM stand for Colin Wilson PC.
Not sure. Maybe light production manager?
PM sounds like production manager for sure. Somebody out there in the industry is now yelling at their speakers because
Lee's probably yelling at us.
Yes, Lee Fillingsness is telling us how much of a morons we are for not knowing what these are. But we definitely know that Paige Rosenberg Marvin is the first assistant director. The first assistant director is Kim Richards. And then we also have, I want to say one of these is cinematographer. Or principal cinematographer. Sorry, and so forth. Anyway, but then it talks about the corporate address for Lucasfilm. Interestingly, we do get a phone number and an email address for a dude at lucasfilm.com.
Well, it says like, that John at fairviewentertainment.com. Is that John Favreau's email?
I don't think that's John Favreau's email, but I think that Jay Swartz at lucasfilm.com is Jason Swartz's email.
But it's kind of spoilers ahead, not that it gives a whole lot here, but
right.
It says after the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. So,
yeah.
And then the Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travails of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic. So,
but
that's what it says, September 20th through the March 23rd.
Yeah, but that might be John Favreau's email address, because Fairview Entertainment is his bailiwick, right?
Correct. And it's spelled like that, too. I
mean, and it's spelled like his John, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if you see the phone number and the fax. Like, it just leaves all. I mean, this has got to be like a newspaper printout somewhere, right? It looks like a cutout from like somewhere in a Variety, you know, tabloid or something.
It looks like it might be some kind of a union mandated want ad or call out for people doing the work, because the main source of this rumor is a website called or maybe even a
it's a single guy posted. I don't know where he got it from. Where does it say?
It says
Production Weekly.
A magazine called Production Weekly. I think that's still a magazine, or was a magazine. Maybe now it's only a website. It's some sort of Hollywood trade about, you know, cinematographers and directors and prop people and so forth.
Yeah, but like I said, with Holiday going in there, that would make sense, right? Because I mean, really, I'm sure they probably do some stuff in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, but I'm sure those 2 weeks people are still doing stuff with their friends and family.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'd imagine that they're probably are shut down, so they probably lose 2 to 3 weeks there worth of time. So yeah, I would imagine. And to your point, I mean, again, that's a lot of the filming stuff. So, you know, but that could include like March 23rd as possible, like reshoots, maybe. I don't know.
That is true. We always know how, as fans over the past decade, especially Star Wars fans, we've learned a lot about the idea of reshoots or coming to pick things up, you know.
But to be fair, I think we get Book of Boba this year in December. Then we get Andor. Then we get Obi-Wan. I mean, and theoretically probably get Bad Batch season 2. And then really, so I wouldn't be surprised actually. And there's nothing to say that Book of Boba is going to get more than a single season. Mm-hmm. So this may be this, like, typically how we've been getting Mandalorian during Thanksgiving, October, December timeframe. Maybe we'll get Book of Boba a little bit delayed, but the Book of Boba towards the end of the year, that'll be kind of the filler for this year, just due to COVID impacts and whatnot. And then we'll get back to picking up Mandalorian season 3 next year.
Kind of
the same time frame. So,
yeah, anyways. Yeah, totally.
All right. So, well, like I said, some sadder news. So it'll be delayed a little bit, but it'll be interesting. And I think that's actually kind of good though, just because I feel like there's just so much Mando. Let some of the other things fruition, you know, come about, and then, you know, give us like a 2-year hiatus of it and then bring it back, especially if they're not going to have Grogu in it. So it's going to have this bigger anticipation feeling like, well, are we going to see Grogu or not? Right. And so you're going to get fans clamoring for that. Plus then, like I said, it gives the other time for the other shows to get some airtime instead of just Mando.
Right. Exactly. And I think that'll be good for expanding that section of the Star Wars universe, you know?
Yep. So, all right. Well, on some other good news, talking about the TV series or the streaming series, talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, actor Hayden Christensen promotes the Obi-Wan Kenobi series at a convention. He went to SuperCon, and it shows an article here off of comicbook.com and how he was taking photos with fans, and looks like they had a really good time, and he was out there promoting with fans. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and the baseball cap that Hayden is wearing, because he's got to be a little incognito when he walks to and from the booth, or he'll just totally get mobbed. The baseball cap that he's wearing was a stunt crew cap, and if you zoom in way better than my old man eyes, it's a Obi-Wan Kenobi, Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi stunt crew baseball cap. So, and I believe he's got a Kenobi emblem on his shirt. Nope, sorry, that's Ocean Pacific, my bad. And so anyway, you see Hayden is posing with fans. They do have this transparent plexiglass divider up so that fans and Hayden aren't able to touch each other, and also to prevent COVID spread, of course. But some of the fans got real creative with how they're dealing with the divider by leaning up against it, and Hayden was very much game to participate. He would lean up on his side. One of these girls did the, you know, sunset heart hands, where she did half a heart on her side of the plexiglass, and Hayden did the other half. Good for him. What a nice, good sport of him there.
Yeah. And one was kind of dressed up in midriff Padme.
She was, yeah. And even had a lightsaber with her and the little silver armbands on. So he did a, you know, touching the one side of the glass, almost like when somebody goes to visit their loved one in prison, I guess.
Yep, yep. And he actually, this was him actually posting on his tweet there, it looks like.
So. Yeah, yeah. He was very excited about it and retweeted or tweeted out the pictures of him with fans. And even put with Joseph Murphy, it says Hayden Christensen with Joseph Murphy. This photo belongs to him. So good for him for, you know, making sure that people know that this is not my picture.
Nice. So, yeah, it looks like a good time. So appreciate that. You know, he's still fans are out there and appreciating Hayden because, again, I know he took a lot of flack. I mean, I wasn't necessarily one that was sending him hate mail and death threats, but, you know, wasn't too happy with his performance over those, you know, second movie. The third movie was a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But obviously, but I can't blame him, you know, as I got older and realized, you know, it's not him that was the problem. It was the script.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it kind of really gave him a disdained taste. I think like some of the other actors and actresses of the sequel trilogy. They're not doing. I mean, obviously, like Daisy Ridley at this point, I mean, she's like come out and said, I'm basically done. Like, I want to do some voice acting and stuff, but like, she's really disdained with a lot of the media and the fans have treated her.
It's just my hope that we as fans mellowed out on the prequels over the years, because you and I both remember when those were brand new movies, there was a lot of vitriol. And I hope that we, A, have learned our lesson and will mellow faster on the sequels, and B, learned our lesson as fans about how it affects the actors when we say these things or post them, because we all know what happened with poor Jake Lloyd from The Phantom Menace. And then, of course, Ahmed Best, Jar Jar Binks, has told us over the years about the times he contemplated self-harm or suicide because of things that fans had said. But now he has, you know, come around and embraced being Jar Jar, and fans for the most part have embraced Jar Jar for his wackiness and just, you know, the unique thing that he brings to the Star Wars galaxy. And I think we're there with Hayden as well, as seen by all these people lining up to get their picture taken with him.
Or Kelly Marie Tran, you know, who plays Rose Tico. I mean, she got a lot of flack, you know, for her character.
So I mean, some of us haven't learned the lesson in fandom, but I think that we will move faster to mellow out on the way that we treat the sequel trilogy, especially once we get around to having Rogue Squadron come out in 23 and we'll have something new to hate. I mean, love.
It just depends on what Patty Jenkins version we get, right? So,
yeah, if we get Wonder Woman Part 1 from her, that'll be great. If we get Wonder Woman 1984, well,
be in for a visual masterpiece, I guess, maybe.
It will be a visual masterpiece for sure. And I'll love it because I get to watch X-Wings on a big screen. And I mean, honestly, what more can I ask for, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted a little more tidbit about Hayden's appearance at the Florida convention here. Somebody posted on their Twitter the picture posing with him where they're all acting like they're force choking somebody, which is great. And then next to that is an Anakin Skywalker pop with the yellow eyes, and they got Hayden to sign the cellophane on the box, but he signed it with like a red paint pen. It looks pretty epic as a signed Funko Pop.
Yeah. Nah, that's like I said, I'm glad he's doing it because, to be honest, well, I mean, a lot of the prequel trilogy actors and actresses don't do a whole lot of cons.
No, they don't. I don't, you know, we were just talking about Ahmed Best. You know, he didn't, because I think he did for a couple of times. And people were just flat out rude and mean to him. The only major prequel actor, I think, who was, of course, also in the original trilogy that did some con appearances and only in the past 10 years or so was Ian McDiarmid as Palpatine.
Ian McDiarmid, obviously Anthony Daniels did a lot.
Yes.
You know, obviously, because he's been in all both, you know, and stuff like that as well. Kenny Baker, Peter Mayhew. I mean, obviously the typical people that were the quote unquote side characters. Right. But I mean, I don't think one Liam Neeson's ever done a con. I could be wrong. No.
I don't think he even contemplates doing con. He's like, what is it? Well, cons or what? What are these cons you speak of?
Is it a heist movie?
some sort of criminal enterprise. I consider myself to be, a very upstanding guy.
Yeah. And I mean, Ewan McGregor's done a few, but not a whole lot. And then obviously Natalie Portman's been the big one. She was supposed to do the Boston one last year, but then COVID put that big impact. So I don't know if we're ever going to get her to come now because of the way stuff is. So.
Yeah. You know who should do conventions, and maybe he does a few of them and I just haven't heard about it, but Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, the dude's in everything.
You would think, I think they do the panels, right? So they do the cons at panels. Mm-hmm. He's done numerous ones. Obviously he always does the big San Diego Comic-Con. He's done a few, but that's been more for the Marvel stuff than it's been ever for the Star Wars stuff. Did they do something for the 20th anniversary of Phantom Menace? Didn't they do
maybe so? San Diego, I should look up to see if Sam Jackson ever signs things at Comic-Con. Because my gosh, that would probably cost you a pretty penny, and the line would be
Ewan and Portman are like $300 a piece for a single one, plus the cast of getting out there too in the con. So
yeah, because for us getting to California is no easy feat.
Yeah, they weren't cheap for those things, but I know people are willing to pay for them because I'm just like, okay.
All right. Well, continuing our rhythm of good news, bad news, we have some sad news to report from the world of Star Wars contemporary animation. Star Wars voice actor Tom Kane has had to retire. As some of you know, he suffered a stroke in 2020, and essentially his family has posted on social media that he's just unable to reliably speak, and doctors don't think he will ever recover his speech fully, and as such, he has now retired from being a voice actor. Kane is probably most well known for his voice work as Master Yoda in the animated Clone Wars, and then, basically contemporary animation of Star Wars. He is the voice of Master Yoda.
Yeah. No, it's it's crazy to think. I mean, and he's not that old either. I mean, he's born in 62, so you know, he's not even quite 60 years old.
Right.
So the fact is, he's unfortunately had his career cut very short.
Yeah.
Because he's got a huge catalog of voice acting, like you said, not just for the Star Wars, but all sorts of animation and video games alike. So
yeah, he did work in the Clone Wars, but then he also did voiceovers for the Powerpuff Girls, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, the Wild Thornberries, video games like Ultimate Alliance and Call of Duty. And of course, he was also a voice oftentimes in the Disney series Kim Possible back in the day. So the
he was doing too was Archer.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so he has been, you have heard Tom's voice in a lot of things. And in addition to Call of Duty and Marvel Ultimate Alliance, he's been in plenty of other video games as a voice as well.
Yeah.
So,
and he's done some live acting as well. So, it's just a shame that, someone as much of his caliber is going to be missed. So
yeah. And our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family. Anything's possible. Never say never, but it seems likely that he won't ever be able to formulate sentences in a reliable way again. But of course his family does want fans to know that he's practicing his signature and stuff. And so, he still may be able to do that kind of mail away autograph stuff. So,
yeah, well, and eventually, hopefully, he'll get continue with his physical therapy and all that. And eventually maybe you get to see him out some cons once COVID settles down. So
true. Totally.
So,
all right, well, let's end the news segment on a high note here, Derek. I hear that for fans of Star Wars The Old Republic MMO, like myself, we had a pretty big video game announcement from the mothership, StarWars.com.
Yes, and this is for fans of all Star Wars games, I think, because this has probably been the best well-received game, maybe outside of Star Wars X-Wing versus TIE Fighter for PC, but I would say this is probably the biggest Or again, most well received, video game over all the Star Wars lifetime so far, at least to say. But Knights of the Old Republic is getting a remake to be usable for the PS5, PlayStation 5.
Which is
really cool.
I am so stoked about this because Knights of the Old Republic, like you said, it's one of my favorite, not just favorite Star Wars video games of all time, but favorite video games of all time. And the press release here gave me a nice little tidbit about how things are going over at Lucasfilm Games that I hadn't really noticed before. But the press release at StarWars.com begins, there are some video games that seem to change everything. There's genre, the art form, what we think a game could be. And then they introduced two of the people behind the remake. Orion Kellogg is the executive producer at Lucasfilm Games. First of all, epic name, bro. Your name is Orion and your last name is Kellogg? I mean, that guy's destiny was to make video games of science fiction nature, right? And then Ryan Treadwell is the lead producer at Aspyr, which is one of the studios helping. And of course, we all know that there's a famous Treadwell droid in the Star Wars galaxy. So both of these guys are tailor-made to be putting together a remake of KOTOR.
Yes. And first release of 2003. So I'm wondering if it'll be, 20-year anniversary is when it comes out, or it seems
plausible. Yeah.
Because, I mean, it depends on how far they are with it now. But typically when they announce this stuff, it's about a year and a half, which would put it approximately right at, because it came out first released July 15th of 2003. So I think there's a good chance that they'll try to rehash it out for its 20-year anniversary.
Yeah. And now one of the things that I always loved about the Old Republic or Knights of the Old Republic was how customizable your character was, and all of the choices that you made had big impacts on what new abilities or pathways were available to you. And I think one of the things that we don't often talk about as to what made it such a great game, of course, the story is just excellent. I mean, a beautiful Star Wars story, of course, but just a really great and compelling story in and of itself. But people don't always talk about this as much these days, and correct me if I'm wrong, my old man brain might be failing me here, but I believe that the rule system underneath the hood of all the computer code was Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition rules, or what we used to call Open Gaming License D20 rules. I'm going to check that real quick while you pontificate, Derek.
Yeah, no, just I think really it was one of the first true like interactive games. Cause I mean, there was a lot of games prior to that, which were role-playing games and you got to make choices and stuff, but it really truly felt like there was just so many different options because you could go extreme and go fully like all the good choices or all the bad choices, which pretty much was most of the time. And then you played a lot of other like role-playing games. It gave you one or two options, but it pretty much, once you picked one major cutscene, it would pick you down one particular path, and it might have three or four different outcomes, but this one was so unique that it kind of just was really cool the way it had like every little bit of side quest and storyline that you did, depending on what your outcome was, could really impact the rest of the quote unquote universe you were playing in. And it really just really was setting a tone. Plus it obviously introduced one of the most beloved characters in the Star Wars universe, which is Revan.
Yeah.
That obviously has a big thing. And obviously, Tom Kane was a voice actor for this game. He voice acted Master Vandar Tokar.
Mm-hmm.
And Uthar Wynn and Roland Wan. So again, someone who's been in that for a long time. But, again, one of those games, because this was really too, which was different than a lot of other choice games. This was all voice acted.
Yeah.
It wasn't just something where it was just read scrolling. Like they literally paid hundreds of, thousands of dollars to all these voice actors to do all these scripts. Right. And again, depending on what your choice was. So it's not like a person just had to read 20 lines. They had to read the 20 lines plus the other 20 lines plus the other 20 lines for every choice you made.
Yep. Yep.
So because, again, the conversation would go differently each time. And I think that's what really gravitated towards me when I went when the Old Republic, the MMO came, MMORPG came, game came out, was that it was the same kind of feel, right? And they've really kept to that. And I think that's what really makes this game So well beloved in the hearts of Star Wars fans.
Totally. Yes. And I double checked on the old interwebs. I was correct in my memory. Third edition Dungeons and Dragons inspired, or, you know, put up the skeleton of the system of rules behind the video game engine of Knights of the Old Republic, which, in my opinion, that was a brilliant move because, I mean, let's be honest, Dungeons and Dragons is a very well designed game. That's why it's still around after all these years, decades even. So, you know, don't reinvent the wheel. Take your Star Wars flavor and sprinkle it on something that you already know is a good system, and you're going to have a timeless hit on your hands. And that is definitely the case here with KOTOR. Now, the interesting question here is, does that mean that the remake for PS5 is also going to be based on D&D rules? Because it said it's a remake, so I'm assuming that they're going to keep the basic of the game the same, just update the graphics, effects, and so forth. But yeah, that would be interesting to see.
I don't think they will. I think they'll keep everything pretty much the same. Keep, you know, obviously the engine's really the only thing that's getting updated in a sense, because they've done this already with Final Fantasy VII.
That's true. That's true.
So, and I mean, that's like basically like, you know, as you would say, just a total remake in itself, yeah. But fans are okay with that because again, it's giving that updated engine. So it looks all pretty and stuff. And I mean, they show a couple of stills, right? Kind of Revan there. And obviously in the video of it. So it's that updated look, which is even more advanced. Cause remember when we got, the Old Republic MMO came out, I mean, that was advanced graphics to what we were looking at from the Knights of the Old Republic. And we were like, oh, this is awesome. And, you know, these graphics are even more astounding today than they were back then, you know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say though, if you have the rig to crank up SWTOR Star Wars, The Old Republic MMO to ultra settings on the graphics, it still looks pretty mind blowing even today. And that game is about to celebrate its 10-year anniversary. So
good stuff. So,
all right, cool. Well, we'll take a quick break so that Kevin can tell us about the other shows you can listen to right here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And then we'll come back to talk about Star Wars droids.
Hi, this is Delilah S. Dawson and her current cold virus, and you are listening to What a Piece of Junk podcast.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Hi, this is Eric Walker, the original Mace, the OM in the universe. Sorry, Sam Jackson. And you're listening to What a Piece of Junk podcast.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Kevin. And, you know, if he were here, he would have joined in on our singing of the Droids theme song, which is honestly, that's right. In trouble. Okay. That is probably one of the most striking parts about this animated series from mostly from 1985. There is one episode that was specially broadcast in June of 1986 as sort of the series finale. That was an hour-long special. But for the most part, every episode of the 13-episode season one was only about 25 minutes or, you know, a half an hour cartoon show on a Saturday morning. Or if you were lucky, some places, I believe, rebroadcast it in the afternoons every so often. And then I think for just a little bit, you could have watched it long after its original airing in Sci-Fi Channel's Cartoon Quest. That was in 1996, but those episodes weren't quite the exact same length because even as late as 1996, television amounts of commercial airtime had changed to where they needed to have longer breaks for more commercials on Sci-Fi Channel.
Yep. So let's talk a little bit about what is Star Wars Droids. The adventures of R2-D2 and C-3PO, because you got to throw that in, right? You got to throw that name out.
Yep.
It's an animated television series that features the exploits of the droid C-3PO and R2-D2 who, over the course of their adventures, often find themselves in the company of new masters and in new dangerous and difficult situations as a result. The series is set in 15 BBY between the events depicted in Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and Star Wars A New Hope. And it says here in a quote, as I'm getting this off of StarWarsFandom.com, George Lucas thought that the best characters to use would be the ones who weren't so heavily tied into the movie's plots, such as R2-D2 and C-3PO, which obviously, again, you know, we could see it this 40 years later. Well, they're obviously the heroes of all this.
That's right. Totally. They were the central to the plot. Anyway.
But back when we only had the first three movies, they, you know, were kind of the side characters, right? So, and the running characters in the Star Wars universe, the droids would be a natural for animation because they could go all over the universe and get involved with all sorts of creatures and the worlds that didn't necessarily have Luke Skywalker, the Empire, or any of those elements. The only constants would be R2 and 3PO.
Yep. It's interesting to me that they, after Return of the Jedi here, they decided to set this cartoon in a time frame before A New Hope. So the Empire is in charge of the whole galaxy. Stormtroopers show up frequently on this cartoon and cause problems for 3PO and R2 and their new masters. And so as a child watching this on Saturday mornings in the 80s, I got a little confused at first because I was like, why is the Empire here? I thought we just beat them and everybody, you know, everybody has a happy ending. Because I was 8 years old and I didn't grasp the concept of timelines, you know.
Yeah, because it's not like they said at the beginning, like, here's a slide that says, you know, follow, because that was the whole thing. It says, and that's kind of funny talking about, it says the challenges on droids was that you essentially had the Star Wars story to bring forward without Luke, Leia, Darth Vader, and Han Solo.
Yeah. So that was the other thing that made me kind of when it comes to droids, none of the heroes that I wanted to see were there. Now, I did end up recognizing Boba Fett in the opening credits, and IG-88 makes an appearance during the course of the series. But for me, as an eight-year-old, those were the bad guys. I didn't want those guys to come back. I was even more confused that Boba Fett was bopping around. It was the first time in my life of fandom, of what turned out to be many times, where I asked myself, is Boba Fett really dead at the hands of the Sarlacc or the tongue of the Sarlacc? You know, that question haunted us for decades to come. And this cartoon series didn't help.
Yeah, I mean, overall, and it's funny, too, because watching it, it's got that cheesy 80s animation.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I noticed that kept driving me nuts is that the characters would go from five fingers to four fingers, depending on the action scene. And I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And it's just like the cheesy stuff. And obviously, you got parts in the show where, like, apparently R2-D2 and C-3PO are, like, super acrobatic.
Mm-hmm.
And R2 can just, like, you know, robot breakdown dance. And
yes, and you had the classic cartoon element of when R2-D2 is moving quickly, his head dome is actually stretched out just a little bit in the direction opposite of where he's going because, you know, momentum. And it's a little Looney Tunes at certain times, right? Yes. And of course, it's all hand-drawn animation, so we got to give him respect for that.
Oh, because, I love it. I appreciate it.
But we had color matching issues throughout the episodes as well. So sometimes a person would be talking, especially female characters, and 80s cartoons are notorious for this. My beloved Defenders of the Earth, Flash Gordon and friends, does this often as well. The color of the hair of the characters will flip-flop between frames because the animation cells get mixed up or just accidentally misaligned between shots. So at one scene, you know, you'll have a girl with red hair, the same girl, the next scene will have blonde hair. And then the scene after that, she'll go back to being a redhead. And, you know, sometimes voice acting gets overdubbed on the wrong character's lips and so on and so forth. Now, this wasn't quite as bad, of course, as Mask or G.I. Joe or, you know, Defenders of the Earth or Transformers. Because one of the things about Droids is that it was produced by Nelvana, I think it's Canadian animation studio, which was a little more attention to detail than some of the Asian art houses that a lot of production companies were using during the 80s because, you know, let's be honest, cheap labor.
Well, not just that, to be fair, C-3PO and R2-D2's mouths never move.
That is true. So it helps a lot. Yeah.
I mean, their eyes would light up. And of course, C-3PO's got like this blue underline costume. We're like, okay, I guess. And it's funny too, because like every major villain's a fat, overweight, short guy.
Exactly. Yep.
Or if he's the bad guy, he's the what's his name? I can't think of it now, but he's half cyborg face. And I'm like, oh, he's the bad guy. You know that right off the
bat. Yeah, you can immediately tell.
So yes, got all the 80s cheese to it, and it, like I said, it's got a catchy theme song. So
yeah, and there was some work done for the production by a Korean company. We can see here in the segment about the production of the show, and it was the Korean company. I'm going to totally mangle this, but I don't think they exist anymore, so I don't have to worry about them suing the podcast.
You're okay.
Hanho Hwang Up struggled with the show's designs, which often encompassed up to 24,000 cells per episode. So again, this was cell animation. And if you did 24,000, essentially 24,000 drawings for a half hour episode. And according to our friends at Wikipedia, Clive Smith moved to Korea for 8 months in order to assist the company. And he estimated that each hour-long pair of Droids and Ewoks episodes cost approximately $500,000 to $600,000 to produce, making them among the more expensive animated series for that time.
That's a lot of money.
In 1985, that's an astronomical amount of money for a cartoon.
That's honestly, because it's like what? It's like five times based off of today's inflation from like the 80s or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. So it would be $2 or $3 million.
It'd be millions of dollars per episode, which when we stop and think about it, I think we've heard that the Mandalorian budget is something like that, right?
Yeah, but that's Mandalorian.
That's true. But I'm just wanted to point out that you, when you make Star Wars for TV, it's not going to be cheap.
I would say, but compare that to like what Rebels or Clone Wars was at the time. Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't think, because I mean, let's take half of that then, right? Because that's saying for the two pairs. So that's saying 250 to 300,000. So let's just say it's $1.5 million per episode. I don't think Clone Wars or Bad Batch costs $1.5 million per episode. I could be wrong. But I might have to Google that right now.
Look that up, because I just found an excellent little piece of trivia about the release of the Droids show back in 1985. Droids debuted on September 7th, 1985, as part of the Ewoks and Droids Adventure Hour. ABC aired a preview special prior to it entitled, geez, this is a title. Ready? The ABC Saturday Sneak Peek and Fun Fit Test with Tony Danza, C-3PO, and R2-D2. During that special, Mary Lou Retton, a famous Olympic gymnast, showed up to teach gymnastics to Tony Danza and R2-D2 and C-3PO.
I stand corrected. Apparently, each episode, half an hour episode in Clone Wars, cost about $1 million.
Okay, we'll see. Although that wouldn't be equivalent to $500,000 in 1985.
No, but it's half, remember, because that was two episodes.
Oh, that is true. You're right. Because it so was Ewoks and
Droids. $250,000 to $300,000, which would be close to $1 million. Yep. About 4 to 5 times would probably be a little bit over more. Because I'm sure in the CGI world, you have a little bit easier time of possibly reusing some stuff. You know, because once you create the character, you basically can just pop them anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess in animations, you probably could do some of that, but I feel like you have to draw everything by hand. Because again, the character, and depending on where they're at, you'd have to redraw them to whatever new planet they're on for each episode, right? But in CGI, you could just literally say, you know, add Anakin to wherever you want him to be in whatever episode, and that character's there. Not to say again that there isn't a lot of technical stuff behind it afterwards, but again, that
with the cell animation, if you had cells of 3PO and R2 walking or spinning or doing whatever, you could swap them out over a background painting of Tatooine or Endor or whatever planet they happen to be on. You could reuse some of it, but you still had to line it up by hand every episode and shoot it with the other camera. Yeah. Anyway.
Yep. Crazy. So I didn't think about it, but I guess it does cost about the same. So,
yep. And once again, if you're going to have a Star Wars TV show, it ain't going to be cheap. Unfortunately for our friends, R2-D2 and C-3PO, but perhaps fortunately for us Star Wars fans, the show didn't get very good ratings and it was canceled after 13 episodes. A major reason for it being canceled is how expensive it was to make. And it's, you know, if it had been a cheaper to produce, they might have kept it even with the ratings level as it was. But alas, the show only made it 13 episodes. I believe the Ewok show lasted a good bit longer.
Two seasons, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, just, yeah. Overall though, it's just watching it as an adult. I mean, yes, I appreciate it because really I never saw it. Because they didn't really put reruns of it, to be fair.
Yeah, if you didn't have Sci-Fi Channel, you weren't going to be able to see reruns.
It wasn't much of that. And it wasn't something I was able to watch it first aired. So, though it would have been something I would have watched, obviously. Mm-hmm. Seeing the Ewoks because, again, yeah, that ran, I think, so, but probably if it ran for 2 or 3 seasons, that would have been about 3 or 4. So I remember watching that, or at least reruns, they put that on a little bit more, possibly.
Yeah. So. Now this is interesting. This is something I didn't know happened in the merchandising section for the show on Wikipedia. In 1988, a Droids computer game was released for the ZX Spectrum and Amstrad CPC home computers. I have a Spectrum emulator. I might have to go find this and see if I can play the game. I'm sure it's abysmal, but
I'm sure it's just like the intro where it's like it's the cartoon and all of a sudden it goes to your grid thing there.
And you're like somehow for some reason 3PO is flying an A-Wing Starfighter. That was another thing that confused me about it. I figured out after a little while that this was happening before Luke blew up the Death Star. But then it was weird because in several episodes, A-Wings and B-Wings are involved. And you're like, in my brain as a Star Wars fan as a kid, A-Wings and B-Wings didn't get created until Return of the Jedi. Anyway, which, I mean, that's not true now, but...
Yeah, but it's weird too because you obviously had the Rebel Alliance. Like, this is 15 years before, so it's only 5 years after, or not even 5 years, 3 years, I guess, after...
Return of the Jedi.
Revenge of the Sith, I'm sorry.
Yes,
Revenge of the Sith. And it's like there's already this Rebel Alliance, and I mean, which we're getting that from the Bad Batch, right? That they're but they're already calling themselves the Rebels. And like C-3PO and R2-D2 already know, like, oh, they're the Rebels, you know, like so it's like okay. So I just thought it was, like I said, some of it's entertaining.
Hey, the halcyon days of the 1980s where fans didn't really have that much of a concept of what is canon and what is official timelines. So,
obviously it didn't exist. They were creating it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, even more confusing, Marvel Comics, did a Star Wars Droids comic book because of course they did. But it takes place, it's called Star Wars Droids, but the comic series takes place between 10 and 6 years before the Battle of Yavin, which is unlike the TV show that took place around 15 years before the Battle of Yavin. So the adventures that you see in print for Star Wars Droids happen like 5 or 10 years later than what was on screen.
So it makes me laugh because everything we're talking about, like when you're watching this, I'm wondering if Lucas actually took inspiration And that's why in the prequel trilogy, you get like R2 and 3PO doing like all the zany stuff. And R2 can like has rockets all of a sudden because now that's an astromech thing, you know? Yep. And, you know, so I'm just wondering if he's like, well, it happened in the cartoon. So I guess it can happen on TV or the movie screen.
Well, speaking of Star Wars creators taking inspiration from the droids cartoon, one of the best Easter eggs, if you will, that fans have discovered now that it's on Disney Plus is there's a guy who's a minor villain in one of the episodes called Kybo Ren with a B, not an L, but everything else is the same as far as his name goes. But clearly he's totally the opposite of Adam Driver's menacing Ben Solo turned Kylo Ren. But still, the name is obviously an inspiration, Kybo Ren.
Yes. And there's the one guy in the, and actually what was kind of interesting too was that it's only 13 episodes for the only season, really, like I said, and then kind of the 1 hour special. But each one is its own arc. So it's kind of like almost prerequisite. I'm wondering if Dave Filoni watched this before making all the stuff with Clone Wars, because like Clone Wars, everything is arcs. So it's kind of interesting to see early Star Wars animation that even back then it had arcs. But there's the one funny one where I'm finishing it up right now and they're doing the whole rune stones.
And
the one girl's dad name is Niels Young. And I'm like, well, I was wondering if somebody's the Neil Young fan on this one.
Yep. I like all the little tidbits that did get picked up. I mean, we talked about Kybo Ren and the way that R2 and 3PO can do wacky things. But there's several other things, too. In The Phantom Menace, we know that Anakin wins the Bunta Eve pod race. Well, in the episode of Droids called A Race to the Finish, the droids end up at a race called the Bunta Race. And, you know, obviously that was reused in The Phantom Menace. And they also go to a swamp planet later on called Bogdan. And I didn't know this, but in Attack of the Clones, Jango Fett says, I believe to Obi-Wan, that he was recruited by a man called Tyrannus on one of the moons of Bogdan.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting. Like I said, and it's funny now because, I mean, at least now we have the ability to see this stuff and pick it up. Like, obviously, the guys that work at Lucasfilms or LucasArts and all the stuff that they do, they had this stuff on record so they could watch it and pick from it, right? If they wanted to, like, oh, this would be a fun Easter egg. Maybe somebody who remembers the show from the 1985 don't remember this, but most of us wouldn't. But now that we can go back through and watch this, and like I said, we'll eventually go back through and watch Ewoks. Like I said, it's just funny to be able to see all these Easter eggs, like you said. So it's not so much an Easter egg now because it's least shareable, without having to, you know, they're like, did this happen or not?
But yeah, so, this all gives even more poignance to the line from the sequel trilogy. No one is ever really gone. And in this case, no idea in Star Wars is ever really gone.
No joke. So, but overall, like I said, it's a fun little thing. I mean, the idea that, you know, back then it's kind of telling the story between, you know, again, prior, because all this really was based off of was C-3PO's line of how, you know, they don't remember anything from their last master, Wedge Antilles. And so really it's kind of just saying, okay, all this stuff, you know, in between that essentially and before they get picked up here by, you know, the rebels at the end there. So that's how they get by Bail Organa. So it's just pretty funny. Like I said, it's just the fact I'm like, well, you know, they did it, but it's just, again, you think about it, it's like some of these stories, and again, I get it, it's the 1980s humor and stuff, but it's like, I think they could have done a little bit better job. I mean,
of course,
I mean, just the idea that the stories and stuff like that, I don't know. I felt like they could have just gone a different direction with it and taken it actually a little bit more serious, but I guess, you know, it's again written for kids and it's kind of like
and another thing to keep in mind is cartoons in the 1980s had such more strict standards of what people and especially Parents Television Council and what have you would accept. Like something like Beavis and Butthead just blew it out of the water back in the day, but that was on cable with MTV, right?
Yeah.
Prior to things like that, yeah. I mean, you just couldn't do certain things in cartoons.
I look at all the stuff that I used to watch, though. I mean, you know, Team Ninja Turtles was very violent. Mm-hmm. G.I. Joe, Transformers. I mean, they were all violent. It's not like you couldn't have a action-packed sequence with it. You know, I mean, you look at Toxic Avenger. I mean, that was, I loved it as a kid, but I never got to actually watch the movie. I knew it was mm-hmm. based. I mean, Swamp Thing. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, you know, scary, you know, stuff. And I mean, like I said, I joke around. I mean, the 80s movies for kids, scary movies, they didn't take no risks. I mean, they just let it all out.
Yeah. But of course that was motion pictures. So they had a different governing body. And you know, with regard to Toxie and his friends on Toxic Avengers, you know, these are all after droids. You know, things began to loosen up as we got closer to the turn of the decade.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. But I remember the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes cartoon was so different than the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes movie. And so I think that in the case of droids and especially Ewoks, I believe Lucasfilm may have sort of hamstrung themselves because they promoted a certain age group to the Parents Television Council and ABC networks themselves. And once they said, well, we're aiming for, you know, 10 and under, they're like, well, then you can't do this, this, and this. I remember it was rare to see an actual blaster rifle in droids. You were watching the Runestone arc. You know, our hero Baobab has a seed gun that shoots plants at people, for crying out loud. One or two times that you see a lightsaber in the droids cartoon, it's used as like a tool to like cut open doors and stuff.
No, it's true. I mean, it was kind of funny because even the stormtroopers have these staves that shoot mm-hmm. blaster bolts and they still suck at that. So
Yeah, totally.
Still can't hit anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Yeah, there's maybe a couple of blaster pistols out of that whole thing. So
yeah. So if you are the kind of fan that enjoyed the Star Wars Holiday Special, I urge you to seek out droids and Ewoks if you haven't watched them yet. But if you enjoyed the Holiday Special, you've probably already watched these. So seek that out. But otherwise, as a Star Wars fan of especially contemporary Star Wars fans, if you started with the sequel trilogy, don't go watch this.
I'll be honest. I mean, because I was kind of been binge watching a bit of it this past week, trying to get it caught up, but I still haven't finished it just because I've been a little under the weather and stuff. But, you know, if you just do like an episode a day or every couple of days, it's pretty tolerable. It's not something that, again, you could just mm-hmm. unwind and let go. Right. I would find it very difficult to sit here and like watch it through like 7 hours straight.
Yeah. I couldn't binge it. Now, you know, kid me might have binged it, eaten the whole box of 3POs. But adult me, I can't do more than like three, like you said, like three in a row, you know?
Yeah, like I said, I can usually watch about, I was trying to do like an episode a day, and that's pretty palatable.
Mm-hmm.
So
totally. But you know, a great place where you can binge episodes is right here on the Fandom Podcast Network. So let me remind fans out there where they can find us on the old interwebs. Our master feed is at fpnet.podbean.com, or you can look for FPNet on the Podbean app. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and of course, now on the world famous iHeartRadio network. Derek runs our Facebook group, so just search up What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. You can email me between shows at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. And I do run our Twitter over at WhatWars. And on Instagram, we're Fandom Podcast Network. Derek, let people know about those Apple Podcast reviews.
Yeah, we appreciate it when you're downloading on Apple Podcasts that you search for Fandom Podcast Network and leave a review for the What a Piece of Junk, What a Star Wars Podcast. We'll take whatever reviews, feedback you're willing to give. Obviously, the 5 stars is what keeps those Kybo Rens off our back. As they are, you know, pirates out there, and we appreciate to, you know, keep the Drunken Gungan under any rapid fire power we don't have to worry about, because coaxium is not cheap.
It sure isn't. And so we definitely want to thank you guys for joining us on this episode. Derek, where can people find you out there on social media?
As you mentioned, I run the What a Piece of Junk of Facebook group. So you can find me under there under my real name, Derek Marsh, or you can find me on Twitter at HoodieDM83. Scott, where can the listeners find you?
I am also on Facebook under my real name, Scott Baltman, and I do have at What Wars for the Show's Twitter. My personal Twitter is at Scotticus Max, and I do write my own science fiction novels, which you can check out my author website at writegreatscott.com. But until next time, please hit us up with your thoughts, reviews, any kind of suggestions you have, whatever we can do to help make this podcast more enjoyable. And please always remember to respect each other and respect each other's fandom. All right, Derek, punch it.